In recent months, the assault case of Peyton Valiente has refocused attention on how cases like this one are investigated. In 2015, he was the toddler physically abused at a daycare, and his case has only recently come to public light. One issue seems to be clear. Best investigation practices weren't followed, including talking to the other children at the daycare. An agency that could have helped in that process is the Children's Justice Center. Carrie Ock is the Hawaii chapter coordinator. We sat down recently to talk about best practices in abuse cases where kids are concerned.
I'm glad you said best practices, because we are very proud of the system that does get involved when best practices are followed. So that would be the Children's Justice Centers would be contacted. Any child where there's a concern of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, they would be allowed to come to the Children's Justice Center and talk about what may have happened to them. So it's a very child-centered, child-friendly approach. Children are able to speak with someone who is specifically trained in how to talk to children. They don't have to necessarily go to a scary police station or something like that. It's a community response that helps support for the best possible outcomes of an investigation and to kind of lower any of those anxiety levels a child might have about talking about what happened.
In this case, we're talking about a toddler and one who was injured. So you're really talking more about the other children who might have observed something that happened to this child, a place for them to be able to talk and a way in which to gather information.
Yes, exactly. So Children's Justice Centers, there are five across the islands, and this is a national model. And usually children as young as the age of 2 years old are able to be what we call interviewed at a center like this. So it's not really an official, you know, interview interrogation, but it's a conversation, like I said, with someone trained how to speak with children that young. It could be the child who has received injuries if they're able to talk, or it could be witnesses to a crime or to abuse like that.
When we talk about children, there are different age groups that come to mind. You were talking now about very young children. Mm. It could be maybe kids who are in the single digits. But what happens when they start to be in the, say, middle school and high school years? Are you still talking about putting them in a program like this, or at what age does this become not the best practice?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So nationally, it is known as best practice to have a child, and I say child, I'm meaning adolescents as well. So anyone under the age of 18 could benefit from this model, where they're able to come to a center that is cozy and warm and private. For the little kids, there's games and toys. For the older kids, there's more, you know, age-appropriate activities or books and things like that. They are able to speak one-on-one, and the older kids handle that, you know, usually a lot better. They speak one-on-one with that special kind of interviewer as well. But they don't have to go from person to person. Like in an abuse investigation, you might imagine there's a number of different agencies that need to get involved. So the idea of a justice center is that the child doesn't have to first talk to the social worker, then go talk to the police officer, then go talk to the doctor, then go talk to their lawyer, and things like that. It's a way to coordinate all that information gathering at one place, and it really lowers any additional possible trauma that a child or adolescent might feel just as a part of the investigation itself. So we don't want to re-traumatize kids in our quest to find out what happened.
The care for a child is clearly coming through the way you've described the process. But there's also the question of how do you get at the truth? Sometimes children perceive things so differently. Often they perceive them so differently. Mm-hmm. And when they can, in some cases, be wrong. Mm-hmm. If you interview them one time, some people might be thinking, well, how then can you make sure that this story is what's kind of, you know, either the truth or sticking, or maybe just because it's sticking, does it make it the truth?
Mm-hmm.
How do you go and approach all of that when you're talking about a child?
Mm. Great question. this type of interview is called a forensic interview. And it's not, of course, like a magic wand where we're able to know automatically, of course, this is exactly the truth of what happened. Many children are very accurate historians. I kind of want to address, like, a lot of people ask that question. And I think that where that question comes from, a lot of people don't want to really believe that horrible things can happen to our children. And so I think it's easier to maybe think like, oh, the child misunderstood, or maybe they're making it up to get back at someone. But we do find that is a rarity. I do want to say that when a child makes an allegation of serious abuse, sexual abuse, serious physical abuse, research has shown, I mean, it's very rare for them to be outright kind of making it up.
What does rare mean? Are we talking about, you know, 10% of the time, or what? Give us some sort of sense of what that means.
Sure.
Words are sometimes difficult to quantify unless we've got some numbers to put behind them.
Sure. So with studies that I've read, take it from between 1 to 8%. And I think that variation is there because it can be hard. If a case is not proven beyond a reasonable doubt or to a certain level where they can take charges at least, it may be classified as not necessarily false, but it may be looked at as false. When not necessarily it's not a false allegation, it just wasn't proved. So I think there's a little bit of a variation there in that 1 to 8%. But national studies, I have found that. And this seems quite low to me.
How many cases do the Children's Justice Centers across Hawaii see on an annual basis?
You know, it varies. So Oahu sees the most, clearly. And then there are centers on Kauai, Maui, and two on the Big Island, so East Hawaii and West Hawaii.
In terms of the process of getting to a Children's Justice Center, what does that process look like?
Sometimes parents or community members will call the justice centers directly and kind of want services. The way a child is able to receive services is that they must be referred by law enforcement or by child protection. So the justice centers need to know that these concerns, these allegations have come through the proper reporting channels. And so the referral would come directly from the investigating agencies.
Right, so they're not just conjecture on the part of somebody who may care deeply about a child and is looking at you as being the agency to go and investigate it.
That's right. So we are not the investigators. We help coordinate the investigations and bring everyone together to be able to do that.
As you look at where we are now in protecting children and of what you know of other centers like yours across the nation, where would you put Hawaii? How well do we actually protect kids?
I think we do a very good job. I think that it is one of the hardest jobs, absolutely, to be able to receive a concern from someone, a teacher, a neighbor, be able to go out, investigate, make the right call. Do we pursue this farther or do we not? I do know that of the calls that have come to child protection, there is about a 40% kind of confirmation rate, I guess, where they say, yes, something did happen here. And I think that is appropriately significant, you know, a significant rate where they are able to pursue it and to find that, yes, this child needs assistance and something really happened here.
Has there been a case where you would have liked to move through it better and that there might have been a better outcome if you had been involved, aside from the Peyton Valiente case that we talked about in the beginning of our conversation, but where you think that it would have truly made a difference?
What we do know is that child abuse is underreported in general. So I know there are a lot of quote-unquote, you know, cases or incidents of abuse that I'm confident we could have helped, the Children's Justice Centers could have helped. I don't know that I could speak to one right now. I know that it's not just in the investigation part that the Justice Centers and the Friends of the Children's Justice Centers can help, because they're also doing a wraparound service. They're making sure that those children get mental health, they get medical care, which can be very physically and emotionally helpful, you know, treatment-wise.
During your tenure, you've seen a number of kids come through at all ages.
Hmm.
Do you have a sense of how many are of the younger ones, how many older ones come through your program who actually take that step of moving through with law enforcement?
Mm-hmm. So that middle school age is the most those are the more the kids that the Justice Centers see.
So 10 to 13-ish?
Yes, kind of that 8, I would say 8 to 13. Mm-hmm.
And just to wrap all of this up, as some people may be hearing about the Children's Justice Centers for the very first time, and as you've already said, hey, we don't take calls from the public if you're concerned about this, what would you ask people to do in just knowing about you?
Mm-hmm. So if anyone has any kinds of concerns, I would really urge any adult to call their local law enforcement to report, or to call child welfare, child protection. You would not be calling the Children's Justice Centers directly, because it has to go through those proper channels. There are people who are specifically set up to take these kinds of reports and to be able to send folks out on an initial investigation. So important for adults in children's lives to be able to speak up when they fear that something is wrong.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Carrie Ogg is the chapter coordinator for the Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers. She's been in that position since October of last year. She previously worked as a forensic interviewer at child advocacy centers in Colorado and Oregon.